We are live back with another episode of Shifting the Narrative on Everything Autism. I'm Torin Kearns, and as usual, I'm joined by the autism sage herself, Mama Baden. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I am super excited that we have a guest with us today. That's always fun to add more humor and honest conversation to our podcast for our listeners. So I am going to let our guest introduce himself, and then we'll get into the podcast.
Hello, I'm Dominic. I was originally from Cleveland, Ohio. Currently, I'm in Washington, D.C., where I work for a federal agency.
They're secure, though. D.C. being, I assume.
Oh, I think everyone in D.C. has, like, the conversation at dinner in a bar is, what level of clearance do you have?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So besides doing that, the reason Dominic is joining us is you guys have something in common. You're both writers, and I wanted Dominic to come on and talk about writing. And so this is my question, and you guys can probably have your author-to-author conversation, but I'm always curious because I am not a writer. What made you get into writing, Dominic? And did you always know that was something you wanted to do?
Well, as I explained earlier, I'm still in the process of really writing this book, but mainly, I mean, I don't know if this book will ever, like, how far it'll be gone or even if it gets published. But for me, I wrote mainly as a means to reflect. I mean, for a while, I kind of had trouble with communicating with some of the issues that autism has, you know, created for me. I mean, I've done, tried to do a lot of outlets in the years to get away with from autism. I mean, I used to run marathons. I did that when I was 12, starting when I was 12, ran a 50 miler when I was 14. Then I got really into academics. I was on like a statewide, it was a statewide competition. I made it to like the regionals for my school. It was like a trivia contest, graduated as valedictorian, went to Georgetown. But the reason I started writing is that academia was no longer that thing that kind of gave me that self-worth to deal with my autism. So writing was a sort of way of figuring what is the other way of getting around that.
That's an interesting perspective.
I like how you mentioned trivia contest. I read a little of the draft. I mentioned before we record, I'm dyslexic, so I don't really read very fast. So I hate to admit that I didn't really get super far into it. But I did notice that you did mention in one of your stories a trivia competition. And that's something we connect with, because when I was in high school, we had a trivia competition too, that I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, called World Quest. Except with that one, it was a team. We had a team of four people, but it was a trivia competition. And that was sort of a big formation moment for me. And I went to a special ed school, so everyone was autistic or had some sort of disability of some sort. And it was a big moment for us because we went up against like normal schools. In fact, we went up against some of the best schools in New York City, like the magnet schools that you have to test to get into. And we were beating those schools. So that was sort of a big moment for us, because when you're in special ed, you're basically just you're there because you've bombed out of several other schools to end up at the school I ended up with. So none of us were like seen as being particularly smart or having any sort of future. So to be able to go up against these magnet schools, where these were the kids who seemed to be like the next future of leaders, the next movers and shakers, and beat them. And some of their reactions when we did beat them was a very formative moment for us in like our self-worth. So that's something that really did catch my eye, besides just the whole writer thing in general, is sort of using academics as a way to sort of process autism and a way to build some self-worth.
Which is, I would never be able to do trivia. I didn't even play Trivial Pursuit very well when I was younger. So we were talking earlier, Dominic and I, and I really appreciated your insight into you know, it's hard for folks to get books published. And you just mentioned that, you know how far it's going to go, where it's going to go, if it will be published. And just sort of like the topics in the book are topics that make people uncomfortable. And, you know, I was kind of saving it for the podcast, but Dominic, I think those are the kind of books that need to be out there. Like, you know, books that make people feel uncomfortable or make them think or even try to resist thinking outside of their little box, I think are the books that shift the narrative, right? I mean, that's what we're here to do on this podcast. And I do understand that we marketing is all about not offending, and we live in a world where offended so easily now. However, I do think that some of the best books that I've read are books that sort of shake up the narrative on whatever the issue is. And they're important books because sometimes reading is the only way to reach people. Like when people secretly read something, they don't want anyone to know, right? They don't have to participate in the conversation, but they're going to read about a topic. So if you were to envision your book published and marketed, who would you say was your target audience for your book?
I'm a federal employee, so I have to keep some of my political leanings secret. But I think if you read the book, you can understand I am in some ways a little bit of a dissatisfied liberal. I think a lot of the big issue with the social justice movements is maybe in their goals of going super far, they don't actually go far enough, and sometimes they might overstep. I think with disability is a big issue because they don't fit neatly. You're not like, you know, being a disabled person, it's not an identity, it's just a thing. Like, and I think the big issue with identity politics these days has been how to integrate that, because you can't really identify with being disabled, you just are disabled. And that's what makes it hard where movements, and sometimes people that aren't disabled that may know otherwise to not step on things, seem to think that they, because they have some unrelated thing, might be able to understand or comprehend, and they don't listen. Like one of my issues with Georgetown is very liberal, very academic, very, you know, progressive school, but they didn't really listen until it was kind of too late for me. I mean, look, I have trouble writing. I have trouble with loud noises. You can't put a testing center right next to a construction site, which is what they did. You can't have it so that college basketball players, if they need access to the same services, which is fine if they have, like, because they have different, they need to have an accommodation room. But the problem is college sports was actually, they actually took up space. They didn't have enough space for us. So routinely, not just on regular exams, but final exams, there was not enough space. So imagine you taking a final at, you know, one of the most prestigious universities in the country, and you find out they don't have space for you. And they don't really have the ability to give you your full accommodations, because that part of that is the loud noises, a big part for me. So that I go and I find out they don't have the exam for me, so I have to wait 3 hours. They don't have the space for me, so I can't actually get my full accommodations. And you know, this happened honestly throughout my life, but it wasn't until I got to Georgetown that was really a problem. Part of that is because it's going to sound bad, but I grew up in Akron, Ohio, like a suburb of Akron. So rural Ohio, kind of in the middle of nowhere, kind of close to Akron, because that's where my friends are. And I did write a lot about Akron because all my friends are from the inner city.
That makes sense. That's where you're from.
But Ohio is not like, nobody from Ohio goes to Georgetown. I'm just going to put it out there. Actually, there was quite a bit, but usually you have to go to a prep school, and there are prep schools in Ohio, or you don't go to Georgetown. And there's not a lot of prep schools in Ohio. Most people are from, like, the East Coast. So, you know, I thought when I got to, like, Georgetown, I thought it was going to be better. It was not well organized in my school. It was actually really bad, almost illegal. But when I got to Georgetown, I find out it's pretty much the same thing, because it's not something that they put a lot of emphasis on, partially because there's not a lot of people with disabilities, but they, and this is my problem is, if you want people to have success, you want to have like equality, you can't say some groups deserve it more than others. If people with disabilities aren't included in these movements, I hate to say it, but people are going to reject them. And it became kind of hard for me because here I am. And this happened on the LSAT too. On the LSAT, I had the entire exam was they forgot that I had the writing disability. So they pretty much, I had to take the exam without my accommodations. I got in like the 99th percentile, but you know, it's like the 99.5 percentile for a lot of the top law schools these days. So it's like you're on the cusp and it holds you just a little bit back. It's more infuriating than if I never was there to begin with, to be honest.
So I will jump in, and I had a lot of the same issues in college. What I will say is a big problem, and I'm going to try to be as unpolitical as possible, but I'd like to apologize in advance to the audience. It's hard to fully separate politics because, if one, everything is politics, and two, we're talking about social justice, which is inherently political. There's just no way around it. So I'd like to apologize ahead of time. As much as I experienced that in college, and I had a lot of the same issues, lack of accommodations. I'm a little older than you, so I was in college between 2011 and 2015. So this is basically the dark ages. Like, our understanding of autism, as bad as it is now, has actually come a long way in the last 5 or 6 years. Before like 2017 or so, it was bad. So I get it. At the same time, I have such little faith in our institutions and in places like college that I think expecting accommodations and expecting colleges, especially large colleges like Georgetown, which everything to them is money. It's about making money. The reason the basketball player is getting priority is, so for those who don't know, Georgetown is a big basketball school. A lot of very famous NBA players come from Georgetown. That's where the money is. It's if you're a prospect for basketball and they think you're in high school, they think you're going to the NBA, Georgetown's one of the schools you go to. You go for 1 year, then you get drafted to the NBA. That's where the money is. They're going to accommodate people with the money. All the stuff about social justice is mostly BS, and it's mostly BS just simply because at the end of the day, the money is going to be with the athletes. The money is going to be where the money is going to be. So I almost don't think it's worth, like, I don't even regard things like colleges anymore because I know it's not going to get fixed. Like, all the advocacy in the world isn't going to help. There is a lot of advocacy. There is quite a lot of advocacy for the intersection between a lot of the social justice ideas and disability. There is. It doesn't always hit the mainstream because nothing good ever hits the mainstream. But we've had people on this podcast, for example. I'm trying to remember his screen name, Timothy. Black Infinity King, I think, is his screen name on Instagram. He's big on the intersection between things like gender stuff, race, and autism. Tiffany with Fidgets and Fries, she's the mother of two autistic kids. One of them is non-speaking. She had a book. She was on Good Morning America. She talks a lot about disability, race, all that stuff. We've had one of our early episodes with Heather Levine, who is a personal friend of mine, who does a lot of work in New York City for advocacy for disability. So there is a lot of advocacy for disability. It's just the stuff you see on like TV, for example, is not the stuff that's getting done. No celebrity, for example, saying Black Lives Matter made me as a Black man less likely to not get shot by the police. Real advocacy is on the ground, and where there's real advocacy, there is progress. It's slow, but there is progress. Even in universities, which I think is a lost cause, I've seen from the stories I've heard from universities, I've seen a decent amount of progress from even when I was in college. So I will say that, but obviously a lot more work has to be done. But quite frankly, places like universities, I think they're just a lost cause. I don't see how you fix it. I'm sorry for being a doomer. I don't see how you fix it when there's so much money.
No, I agree. I think part of the issues with the universities is they've become more and more dominated by the wealthy. And I'm not going to say my family was poor. My family was well off, well beyond well off. But there's like all my friends are not very well off at all. They're very poor. there was no way that they were ever going to get into a top university. And even if they had the grades, which they didn't, I know the statistics and the math. I do think, and I think with universities, it's become a big issue, honestly. It's kind of why I focused more on the university. I think the universities, I think you're probably right. I don't want to admit it.
I don't want to admit it either.
It's just like, the problem is with the universities is they're so, so obsessed with money right now, especially the elite universities. But I mean, the value of a college education has gone way down. And now part of that Georgetown's, I'm going to say part of the reason I got it, I have a pretty well off federal job. I'm on a pretty high trajectory in the government, but I probably would not have been able to get that right away out of college. It's not really exactly where I'm at right now, but I have like a really nice path that I have lined up to be in a pretty okay agency. But I think the problem with a lot of these universities is because they're so money focused. I think with anything, they just, I don't know. There's like, it's almost like, especially with me, I think partly it's because I'm a kid almost. I mean, not a kid, but you know, I just got out of college. You're a kid
until you're like 30, honestly.
Yeah, it's like, for me, it's like, especially because it's like all these universities, you know, they tell you when you're growing up that they're going to be like, that they're the place for all this advocacy. They're the place to make things better. And I think it kind of goes with American society in general. I think a lot of things end up being more focused on marketing or value. I don't see a lot of value out of celebrities these days. I don't see a lot of value out of colleges. I mean, I'd like to say so. I mean, it's just kind of, I get your point. I think that's almost what I kind of want to say without saying. It's just kind of hard to, it's because there's just, you know, that there can be hope, there can be progress, and it does happen slowly, but the way they market it, just, it leaves you, you know, I wish they almost didn't market it like that.
You know, and I feel like, you know, if you're college at this point, you know, I remember, because I'm older than, of course, both of you, and, you know, my parents were from the generation where most people didn't get to go to college, right? And so me going to college was significant and college was important. But my dad's generation, you didn't need a college degree to have a good job and take care of your family, right? And then my generation was, you get a degree so you can get a job so you can buy a house. And I think at this point now, it's like, I don't really know if the colleges are really benefiting and creating thinkers, unless you're going.
Oh, they're not. They're not creating thinkers.
Yeah. Unless you are going to our education system before college is not either at this point. But if you're not going to get a specific, like my degree was very specific, right? In order to be a speech therapist, I needed very specific training. So the investment of time and the low cost at the time when I went to college was worth it. I have children right now who are college age. I would not say it was worth them having student loans and paying unless they knew exactly what they wanted to do. And it was very specific because it's a lot of money wasted and you don't really get anything for your value. And now businesses are recognizing the letter, as Torin calls them, the alphabet people, do they really know how to actually apply?
I think it's going to be interesting going forward. I think with disability, I think one of the advantages, because I did kind of go for a specializing, like I did economics with politics. I'm an international political economist. I worked for the same federal agency that did the Marshall Plan, which a lot more underfunded now and a lot more progress needs to be done. But
yeah,
so I do have a very specific degree with that. I think it'll be interesting for us people with disabilities because they're so undervalued, and people with college education, I think there might be a pushback where you might see people get more employed with disabilities and people without college educations. I think those are the future, to be honest, with the economy.
Well, I agree. Totally agree. There was an article, I can't remember how many months ago it was, where businesses came out and said, we're no longer looking for people with college degrees. We're looking for people who can think, people who have a skill set to offer, which is going to open up the doors for folks who have a disability, because what they can do will outshine the alphabet folks who cannot think outside their alphabet. Because, I mean, I've worked a long time as an adult, and some of the most incompetent people I have met are people who have high degrees or overeducated, and they can't do the job, right? They can't even think past the manual or the instructions or what does a curriculum say to do. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, where is your common sense? Like, have we just lost that? So I think that
we have. The one thing I will say before we move on from the topic, one thing I will say in defense of colleges, and I can't believe, like, it hurts my soul to defend colleges, but I will say that for someone like me, and for a lot of people coming from my background where I grew up in the projects, I did not have a lot of privilege. I have several learning disabilities, so I did not have particularly great grades. I had to work very hard for half the results. I was not someone anyone thought would do anything with my life. I didn't score particularly high on the SATs. Like I said, I came from a very bad background, a very abusive home. Something like college, especially being able to go away to college like I did, offers a way out that a lot of people just who came from where I came from, and obviously I'm a little biased, just like Dominic focuses on Akron, that's where he's from. Where I'm from are the George Washington rehabs in Washington Heights in New York City. That's where I'm from. I'm from a place where everyone I grew up with on the block are still on the block. Not because they're lazy, but just because the odds are so stacked against you. So something like college can allow you to not only get out of that environment, but meet different people. I met so many different people from so many different walks of life, and it was so enlightening that it forever shaped how I viewed myself and how I viewed the world. And I wouldn't trade that for anything, even with the crippling college debt. I wouldn't trade that for anything. So it does still have its benefits. I just think, and Dominic has said this as well, so much work needs to be done. And there is, like I said, there is work being done, but it's so deeply rooted that it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a battle. But I do want to sort of focus a bit more, Dominic, on you, because you have a very interesting story. And I think a lot of our audience would be interested in that. So you mentioned how, and I read your first short story. You mentioned how you were talking about how you focused on academics because you had this need to prove people wrong. And I definitely identify with that, because I felt the same way when I was your age, this sense of, I need to prove you wrong because no one thinks I can do anything. First of all, why academics? And because you mentioned first was marathon running and academics, and then how do you feel, like, has your view changed? Do you feel it helped you? Do you feel it sort of changed your mindset? I know it's a two-part question. So the first part would be...
I think with academics, it was as simple as... I remember I was a guidance counselor. I don't know why. I always got A's. I always got A's. But my guidance counselor basically tried to put me on a trajectory of, like, not graduating high school, much less going to college.
That happened to me, too, with my guidance counselor. It's the exact same thing that happened to me.
And I was like, why? I mean, I got assaulted growing up, beaten up, punched. But for some reason, like, violence, literal violence, doesn't make me angry. But someone telling me I can't do something, that pisses me off. It really does. And I got so mad about it that I just did it anyways. The pure reason I went to Georgetown was spite. And maybe part of the issue is maybe, like, a lot of it was adapting to a higher stress environment. But, you know, once you already accomplish it, I will say one of the things, and Georgetown did give me all those experiences. And like I said, I'm very careful what I say, because I might end up getting a grad degree at Georgetown. I enjoyed my time at Georgetown for the most part. I was very depressed at the end because I started realizing how differently I was being treated. But I had experiences that I wouldn't have anywhere else. So And that's what, like, academics, for my mom, my dad, that was always a big thing. I don't know if you guys can see me, because my lights are bright. Turned on. Now it's bright. For me, academics, I think with running, eventually, I think my thing is you do something, right? You do 50 miles. What else? My dad does 100 milers, like on the regular. So I could run 100 miles, but at that point, you're just adding another 50 miles. I don't think there's anything. What's 50 miles? You've already done more than 99.9% of people. So it's like more is just too much. Then it's like, you know what? Running's boring. That's what it was. It's like, and this is gonna sound bad. At the first, I don't like to poop in the woods. And I did the math in my head, and I'm like, I run 50, I don't have to poop in the woods. I run 51, I have to poop in the woods. It's a mix of being pissed off. Probably part of the reason I ran anyways, just like, I'll do this because who the fuck? You say I can't do it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But you know, eventually you just do it too much and you're like, academics, that sounds fun.
Academics is a never-ending, can be a never-ending
I
challenge.
could never imagine academics being fun, only because, like I said, I had struggles with that. But like, I definitely had the same mindset of if you tell me I can't do something, which literally people were telling me that my whole life. They told me when I was a kid, I'd never be able to play sports because I had some like muscular skeletal issues. They said I'd be lucky to be a water boy. That's an actual quote. They said they thought I had cerebral palsy originally. Nothing against cerebral palsy, but like I don't have cerebral palsy, but that's how bad some of the muscular issues were. So in high school, I really dedicated to playing sports and tried my best to be good at it. I still sucked, but I will say I put more effort than anybody else because I need something to prove, even though I was disadvantaged at it. And I had the same thing with academics where I was bad. If I didn't try, I would fail everything. And people just assumed I'd fail everything. So I put in so much work to do the best I could, even though I didn't do great, just to prove them wrong. They said, you're not going to college. So I'm like, well, I knew what the cutoff was to get into a university. So I'm like, I need to do this much, which is going to be hard, but I need to be able to do this much because I need to get into university to prove people wrong. I had the same issue with the guidance counselor. I had a guidance counselor tell me, I've told this on the podcast, insist that I go to a community college. Once again, nothing wrong with community college, but the reason I wanted to go to university was I wanted to get out of my apartment because I was living with a father who was very abusive in a bad neighborhood. The whole point was I was trying to get the hell out. So I'm not going to go to community college and be stuck in the same situation. And the guidance counselor just couldn't get that through her head for some reason. And this was a special ed school too. So I really, she worked with kids special needs. So I don't know. But she couldn't get that through her head. But I definitely, that definitely resonated with me, that sense of if someone tells me I can't do something, now I have to do it just to spite them.
Well, I mean, for me, I think it's a mix of both. I mean, you might say like the reason I was valedictorian was because it was spite. The reason I like learning though, I learned throughout this process that I don't like academics. I like learning. And maybe I said that wrong because for me, it's like I like learning things. I really do. I've always enjoyed the world's a very interesting place. I mean, eventually when you learn enough about it, you realize it's kind of a boring place and that people really do kind of act the same or the similar wherever they're at. So, but I mean, when I was a kid, I liked reading about, I still do. I like reading about every county in the US. There are what, 3,100 counties or so. So if you learn enough about counties, you can find really interesting stories. Like there's a county, I think it's Kalawao County, I might be saying it wrong, in Hawaii. And it's entire it was an entire purpose was a leper colony. And for some reason there are still people that still lepers that for some reason it was like closed down in the 50s, but they like kept this county around. Even after le leprosy was no longer like as difficult of a disease. So you have places that there's like so many places, not just in the US, but around the world that just have very weird stories that if you don't, that's what I liked about ed education as I loved reading. I loved going out. I mean, I went from not really reading anything till reading 1984 and just entire classic. That was like literally like the first book I read was like 1984 because I just love information. I still love information. I don't like school. I like information. I don't like testing. Testing is incredibly frustrating because if I care about my score, then I want to care about the accommodations, because yes, it's painful, but I'll just do it. But once I care about the score, you get the competition angle, and it makes it way less fun. I mean, I would love to go in and have a conversation with Fauci without having to get, 'cause I had a conversation with Fauci once, but yeah, you know, I only got it because I got to Georgetown, and I'd rather just, it's gonna sound like bad and impractical. I mean, I wish we kind of were in a society where it was more comfortable about just having these conversations without this idea of one-upmanship and achievement. So, in a point, I like learning. I don't like edu academics anymore.
I think you just said that very well, Dominic. I always say if someone would pay for me to just go to school for the rest of my life, it wasn't that I want to take tests, because I don't like taking tests because I'm not competitive and I don't care about my score. So for me, it's kind of like a waste of time, but I do love learning and I still love learning. Thankfully, we have access to lots of things and we can learn from other people. But I do think that I love that you said to have a conversation. I will just quickly share, it has nothing to do with the podcast, but the story just popped in my head because I shared it during my trip in Guatemala with strangers when we were just hanging out. I love to play this question game because this question game where you ask these questions about like just weird stuff, it leads to the most interesting conversations. And then you learn from other people based on where they're from and you know, you hear about, like you said, stories about accounting. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. There's a whole new world, you know, a whole world that I'm not aware of as to how something originated. So it's hard for me to understand people who don't enjoy learning. But yeah, I don't like the academic part either. No, I do like writing papers because I like research, but I do not like taking tests. I have a question for you all, for you both of you. And it, you know, you can answer or not answer. But out of curiosity for myself, but I'm also thinking of our listeners in terms of parents who are listening who have children that are autistic that they may or may not see as, you know, a desire skill set or something towards creativity and writing. But just out of curiosity, what is your process, Dominic, writing your book? Both of you, do you type it paper and pencil or do you dictate it auditorily for? Because there's so many options now. Before, all you had was a what? A fountain pen, and then you had a typewriter and a pencil and a ink. So now you have so many
We're not
options.
that old, Stacy. We're not that old. Don't sell me short. I'm not that old.
I watched a movie this week on the plane, and they were using a fountain pen. So that's why it popped in my head where we use a fountain pen. I didn't use one. So what is your process for writing your stories, Dominic? Is it And Dominic, the reason I'm asking is because honestly, I'm fighting the narrative around every child needs to have a paper and pencil handwriting skill in order to be successful in life. And I don't think that's the case. And we have technology and we have so many wonderful ways to put our words
I
on.
never really write with a pencil. It's painful. I mean, I wrote the story mostly on an iPhone, to be honest. I just typed and sometimes I dictated it. I mean, wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, and I haven't published it yet, and I assume Torrin may have published it. I just the problem with me is I worry about, because one of the things I do is I kind of just write my thoughts down and I kind of ramble. And I was like wanting to publish it a lot more like earlier because I just wanted to get the thing out. But for me, I just wrote things down just because I wanted to have that idea in my head. And I feel like if you don't write things down, you forget. Sometimes I put them down in stories that are semi-fictionalized because sometimes it's kind of hard to go back to a story that you know is real, all real. It's just not as fun. And it, not even just fun. I mean, sometimes it's kind of trauma-inducing, to be honest, because
Yes.
I don't really like thinking about the past, and I despite kind of talk about it generally, and I'm really bad, I think, at expressing some of my viewpoints. So I write them down as more of a way of expression. And I type them. I mean, I've typed. That's how I got through college. I mostly typed. I can't do that with a lot of economics things, and I've always liked economics. So I write paper and pencil as little as I can.
No, I feel you. I went to school for creative writing. Since Stacy mentioned about going to college and having a clear idea, creative writing is about one of the most useless majors you could ever go to school for. But I will say you had tracks, and my track was fiction and nonfiction. So I wanted to be, at the time, I wanted to be a memoirist because I was that self-centered, I guess. And I wanted to talk about my life and stuff. I still may at some point. Originally I wanted to write a book. I don't want to write a book about my life and be just basically inspiration porn. Like, look at all the stuff I overcame, because I just don't want to do that. I don't have a desire to do that right now. But I get what you mean by the idea of it bringing up trauma. Like, one of the essays I won an award for, I think it was the first thing I won an award for, was about a very traumatic both event and then relationship with the person that led to that event that happened in my life. Everyone loved it. It was the first thing I won an award for, the most traumatic shit I ever wrote. And I'm like, so this is what I have to do to get attention. I have to just tear my heart out and throw it on the paper.
That's kind of why I've been debating on publishing it, because I didn't really, one thing I don't like is I don't like this idea of just publishing things just for the attention and saying I overcame that or did that. I completely get that, because it's not overcoming it. It's more like, this is what frustrated me. I wish we could move past that.
It's exactly, which is why I'm sort of, right now I've moved more towards fiction. I'm working on a sci-fi series with a friend of mine from high school who's an artist, so sort of like collaboration. But and I do a lot of screenwriting. That's most of what I publish into the world are scripts that I co-wrote. That I co-write, I guess. But I just don't have a desire anymore, even though I went to school for that, to really talk about my life and just my life. I want to talk about larger issues. And fiction, I can talk about larger societal issues, because all these autism issues are connected to all the other social justice issues that get spoken about. And I've experienced that as someone who has multiple identities, because just because you're autistic, just because I'm autistic, doesn't make me not Black, for example. So I have all the same experiences that Black people have to, where my heart goes in my throat and everybody sees cops. I've been racial profiled by the police. I've had racist things. My school was upstate on Lake Ontario in upstate New York, which is very white, very conservative, and very racist, like openly racist. So I had to deal with all those as a Black man on top of the stuff I had to deal with being autistic. So I always want to talk about wider issues. And I feel like in fiction, I just have, obviously because it's fiction, I have more freedom to do that. So that's sort of where I'm at, like as a book writer right now.
Interesting.
But to answer your question, Stacey, I type my stuff, because I can, I can't dictate well. I tried it only, which sucks because dyslexia, I have trouble writing words, but I can only get the thoughts in my head out coherently if I write it in words very slowly, and it takes up a lot of spoons, but that's the only way I can get it out coherently.
Thank you both for sharing that. So there are different ways to write a book. There are different ways to write a screenplay.
So Dominic, I'm actually curious. So during all this, the marathon running, the academics, the struggles in college, how did your family feel about this? Were they supportive? Were they not supportive? Where was their head?
My family, I don't know. I mean, part of it is like, I feel bad because I don't want to take away from people that have like harder struggles. My family was very supportive throughout my life. I'd say people generally aren't supportive. I think they try to be supportive, but they're not. But what I find is it's family, it's friends, and it's not really institutions. Like, I think when you're a kid, you think institutions are going to fix things. You think it'll be the government or the universities. I thought, the biggest issue is how to like express that is movements don't solve anything. They never have, and they never will. But individual people can make all the difference. And that's what I found in my own life, is that, you know, it's never been anybody's idea. Ideas don't solve anything, but it's always been people. There's too much focus, I think, in fiction and nonfiction and just society in general on ideas and an idea that changed society. I think at the end of the day, I think people usually know. I think the golden rule is generally the best thing. I just think people don't always apply it. I think people try to overthink what's inherently a simple thing. Just treat each other the way you want to be treated. And it's hard to do. And I don't know if I always do that correctly.
I just have to say to the listeners, I want them to rewind and listen again to what Dominic said on it's not the institution, it's not the movement, it is the individual. And that is what we're trying to do. If you are a listener and you shift your narrative, you can help somebody else shift their narrative. And then we have that domino effect because I truly believe that one person can shift the trajectory of another person's life just by being kind or being generous or accommodating instinctively. And then it's just a natural organic movement without a title. Thank you. I just had to say that. Thank you, Dominic.
You are very much right. You are very much right. So, Dominic, if you had a magic wand in Georgetown or any university where you could change things the way you'd like to see them, what would be some of the changes you would institute to help people like you and to help disabled people in general in universities?
I mean, this is something I probably wouldn't say earlier. I would like them to be more inclusive in who they admit. I think one thing is they have made a lot of progress on racial justice. They have made progress. And they've made progress in some ways in disabled justice. I think the big issue is as long as these schools are entirely of people that have money and privilege, and I'm not going to say I'm not one of them, but it's going to be very hard. And I think some of the ways I lack in understanding is not being in the same situation a lot of my friends were. But the understanding people I have generally found to be are the people that have had similar but not the same struggles. And that's where I'm at. I think a lot of these universities, they need to, they getting past the elite. That's one of the things I hate about education is I think the biggest value of in college education is not in the degree, in like the in the job prospects. It's the ability to gain a global understanding. And I mean, I have a lot of friends from different countries, and there's a lot of people from very different countries in Georgia. And it's very interesting to meet people, but they're all from the same like class of people. And this is going to sound bad. There's a Chinese girl, a friend of mine, you know, she had never seen a person that was black in her life, really.
I know
Personal
that, yeah.
conversation. So when I introduced her to my friend from Ohio, and she had not really seen people that were not in that sort of like college prep trajectory. So you have people that they may be very liberal, and I mean it, but it's going to be hard. And like obviously there's like actual structural changes, like move the disability place away from the construction site.
The
I think that
construction
construction
zone,
site's
that's a
almost
simple
done.
one, yeah.
Give them more staff. During COVID, they should have been more staff because part of this is I went to school during COVID. So all the things that used to exist for disability, that got taken away. So it was like, let's have one guy run an entire department. And naturally that department fails. I'm not surprised. I mean, I don't even think this is like I think a lot of problems are not malice. I felt like they're malice. You feel like they're malice a lot, but a lot of them are just people are overwhelmed, and you add another, they don't tend to stack these services well. But I think it tends to work better when there are more people that get overwhelmed by these overwhelmed groups. And that sounds kind of counterintuitive, but because there's not a lot of people with disabilities on campus, and I'd say not a lot of people with severe disabilities, like there's people that can kind of deal with it. I'm okay with dealing with it, but there's a lot of people that, not a lot of people that have like the same. Like they're all above me, I'd say, when it comes to being able to deal with it, which is saying something because I can deal with a lot of this stuff. So they lack a reason to actually put more emphasis on this. And I feel like if there was more diversity in colleges, and now this isn't going to be something easy because it's going to be hard. Like if you look at studies, one of the things that is in college diversity has declined in the last couple of years. And part of that is actually because of some of the changes they made during the movement. Like when they got rid of standardized testing, one of the issues with doing that is people, if you go to like an elite prep school, now they give everyone A's. And because now they focus more on experience, somebody that has a dad that owns a jet ski farm is going to have a lot more experiences than somebody that is in the center city. It's just how it is.
Yeah, we could
be careful. Like, I wouldn't be comfortable, like, saying that any one change, but I'd like to have a more of a mindset to doing it that's beyond just, let's do disability to the point that it's going to be attractive on television. That's the issue. The flyer diversity is the big issue. It's like they want diversity up until the point they can have like a flyer that says, this is where the black guy is, this is where the gay person is. And then they don't want any more.
I have friends who are on the flyer to my university. It's like, oh, he's the black guy. And I 100% agree. I generally don't like talking bad about things like DEI, and I don't like using the term woke, not because I don't have issues with it, but because the right wing oftentimes leverages it for nefarious purposes. But I actually do agree there are a lot of issues. When they got rid of standardized testing in a lot of places, the idea was good, because the idea was the money that the prep for these tests cost is going to benefit rich people. I experienced it myself. I couldn't afford SAT prepping when a lot of people I went to school could, because I was poor. That put me at a disadvantage. Luckily, I have an autistic photographic memory, and I figured out with the SATs, they tend to recycle questions, and there's a pattern. Same thing with the state test, there's a pattern to them. So once I figured out the pattern, I could use photographic memory to make up for the fact that I didn't actually know the answers, but that's neither here nor there. The problem is, like you said, they focused on experience. A rich kid's just going to have more opportunities for experience than someone like me who grew up in the projects. And I also experienced that in college. I was a journalism major to start in college before I switched to creative writing. One of the reasons I switched was you quickly realize you're getting nowhere in journalism unless you do a bunch of internships and you know a bunch of people. And you're not doing internships during the summer if you're working for a living like I was. So, because those internships don't pay. So you quickly realize the solutions they come up with, while they're well-meaning, if you take a step back to think about them for 3 seconds, you go, oh no, this could actually make things worse. And unfortunately, there's in like universities, like we said earlier, there's not enough critical thinking. So there's not enough people taking a step back and going, okay, let's think about this for a second, because we might make a decision that actually exacerbates the problem.
Yeah. It's, you know, Dominic, when you were explaining that scenario so clearly, and I do appreciate it, there's a commercial. I don't know if you all have seen this commercial, but there's a commercial, and, you know, commercials right now are so, it's like a movie. So by the time the commercial's over, I'm like, what are they selling again? Like, I don't even know what they're selling, right? So, because I'm so engaged in the storyline. And there's a commercial, I don't know what car dealership it is, but it is a dad and his son, and they are driving this off-road vehicle to this waterfall, and they're watching the waterfall, and the end of the commercial says something to the effect of, I don't know, like, you know, Kia for all, right? And so the whole point is, like, you know, everyone with a disability can, like, you know, drive our car. And I was thinking, what does a hearing impairment have to do with an accommodation in a car? Like, I don't understand where the hearing impaired dad and son, what the car, I mean, I'm just like, it's such a BS commercial. Like
how does a hearing impairment affect your ability to drive? I mean, I'm sure there's some effects. I don't drive. Being from New York City, I don't drive. So I'm sure there's some impairment, but, like, if you're a quadriplegic, you're probably going to struggle to drive a car.
And also what you said is that they're not really addressing a disability that requires work accommodations, right, for them to have automatically in the car.
Like, if they have a car that a blind person can drive, I might be interested.
Thank you.
I'd be like, okay, now that's some critical thinking skills there. Yeah. You figured some shit out.
Yeah.
The funny thing I find about all this, like, marketing is that we say it's, like, all about the money. I think a lot of these organizations think it is, but I honestly lose a lot of talent. And that's the big issue, is that there's more value to be gained, especially with the population. The world's population is slowing down, right? You're going to have to be more inclusive of the labor market to get the same type of quality patients and quality candidates. So, like, they shouldn't be trying to think about diversity as a marketing thing. And this is what frustrates me. They should be thinking of it. There is money that is being lost every day by businesses, by universities, because they select the same people. I mean, there's not going to be as much innovation. There's not going to be as much going around. And partly to blame is the inability for organizations to adapt, because they adapt half-assedly.
That's how they adapt. The way you struggle to say that word, that's how they adapt. Like that's their adaptions, half acidly. That they can't even say it. That's how bad they are at adapting.
Yes.
But we're getting close to time, so I want to start to bring this in. I didn't mean to cut you off, Stacey, but Stacey, is there anything you'd like to say before we go? And then we'll ask you, Dominic, did anything you'd like to say? And then we'll bring this in.
I just want to say that my final words are, Dominic, I would love to have you on again as a guest to talk about some of these dynamics, because I think that our listeners, you know, I'm always thinking about my parents' perspective, right? Them trying to figure out what to do to support their kids, and you know, they worry about the future. And I think that maybe this generation of parents can do a little bit more shifting. Hopefully every generation does. But if they are aware of these kind of situations, right? If we discuss these things openly in terms of, it looks nice on the surface, you know, just, and Torin, you know, and I'm going to stop because I know we're short for time. But one of the things that drives me crazy, Dominic, is when they started the whole, you know, inclusive setting. And I thought, that's not the answer. The answer is supporting people's needs. Like, it's not about throwing everyone in the same classroom and saying, oh, we all have access to this stupid curriculum. It's supporting the individual needs of each person. And specifically, of course, because of my role in the school system as a speech therapist for kids with disabilities, but that's not the answer, right? It's not about, oh, because it just makes everybody feel good. It makes everybody feel good. You know, my kid with, you know, disability goes to school with the neighborhood kids and we all feel good about ourselves. I'm like, but they're just sitting in the back and no one's supporting them. Like, they're not even able to really get access to and learn because you all made it look pretty. And I call it's my theory on putting frosting over the burnt pieces of the cake so that nobody notices the burnt pieces of the cake. You know, we have the disability pamphlet and we have, you know, and even now, and you can edit this out, Aaron, but I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but people are consciously having children that are biracial because that's the only children they will hire for commercials so they can cover the diversity in one big lump, right? And that doesn't make the world more inclusive. It just covers the burnt pieces of the cake with frosting.
Exactly. I didn't know my name is Aaron now, but we learn things every day. I'm learning something on this podcast. I have a new name.
Sorry.
So Dominic, as we bring this in, is there any last things you'd like to say?
Yeah, I would just say going forward, I just think people have kids with autism. I think one of the things my parents did wrong is they kind of gave me this idea that, yes, you're autistic, and obviously this has a lot to do with being wealthy and privileged and being in that situation. But they gave me like this, I think, this false idea that, yes, things, you know, things might be a struggle, but, you know, you'll overcome it all. And I think one of the things I think the problem is you got to understand, I think society's going to make it difficult. Finding less value, I think, in material and advancement and going forward towards that. I think for the autistic people, I think trying to find more value in advancing what you like is where it has to be. And it's hard to get to that point, I think.
I agree, but we're working towards that. And I think you're doing a lot of good work. I would encourage you to keep writing. I do understand the issue with your government job. So I understand if there are some reservations about publishing because you don't want to jeopardize a good gig like that. But I will say you have a very strong writer's voice. I was definitely very interested in that. You can't really teach that. That's just natural ability. So obviously I do hope you continue to write your thoughts down. But Stacy, that's why we're working to
shift the narrative on everything autism.
See ya.